We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
And good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. And we're glad to have you with us. And we're also happy to have back here on the program once again, Sandy Mason. She is horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And for a long time now, once a month on a Tuesday, she has been here to talk about things that grow in the home landscape. And this is a chance for people who are listening to ask questions. Maybe you have a problem and you're not really quite sure how to deal with it. You can call in. It can be a pest issue or disease or, you know, what have you. And Sandy will do her best to help you out. Maybe you're still thinking about a particular place in your landscape that you're looking for something, some plant, and you're just not sure what. You can call in and talk about that. We talk about trees, shrubs, grass, stuff you can eat, stuff that's just there to be pretty, any and all of that, houseplants, indoors, outdoors. What have you? 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Thanks very much for being here.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Well, we're just having some rain here this morning. I'm sure that other places around us in central Illinois have indeed gotten some rain, but it's been kind of spotty. I was thinking about the fact that in June we got twice the average monthly rainfall, and then now we're getting almost 2 weeks into July, and here in Champaign-Urbana, until just this morning, we got almost nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it just shows you how you can swing between the extremes.
Yeah, and I always say it does seem like it always evens out eventually. If we get a lot of rain, then it sort of shuts off for a while and all that kind of stuff.
So the climatologists say.
It doesn't feel like that sometimes. Right. But it's hard on the plants. It's hard on the plants.
Yeah, around my yard, certainly I have places where the grass is starting to brown up. And some plants are actually starting to kind of yellow up, that's what it's all about. Suddenly they had all the great water, and then suddenly they're saying, hey, what happened?
Right. Well, the good news for the grass, if people do have like Kentucky bluegrass, perennial ryegrass, those are all cool season grasses. And so their natural thing is to go dormant. I know it's kind of, we're not real happy about it because it tends to turn kind of brown. But so they can go, Kentucky bluegrass can go a couple weeks easily and still be alive. The roots will still be alive, but it won't be green at that point, if it doesn't have any water. So that's perfectly normal. And that's what it does. And it actually could go several weeks with just a very small amount of rain and still be alive. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't get too terribly concerned about the lawn at this point unless you want it to stay green. And then obviously you're going to have to water on a regular basis.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have some calls here. Let's talk with them. And we'll start with someone in Paris. This is line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
Morning.
Nice to talk to you again, Sandy.
Great.
Listen, I have a question about spirea. I took my spirea to the ground this spring. And so it have nice new green foliage. And, boy, they have took off. All the rain has done them really well. And they're getting pretty gangly looking again. Can I give them a haircut again without doing any damage?
So is this pink spirea or white spirea?
Yeah,
or
pink.
The pink one? Yeah, I wouldn't have any problem with it. Because sometimes, as you say, sometimes they'll actually get so lanky that they flop over. Yeah, and that's not too exciting. So, and the nice thing about the pink spirea, it blooms on new wood, the wood that's produced, this year. So you certainly could go ahead and prune them back. Or you might want to wait. Is it flowering right now?
Yeah, in fact, because I pruned it back, and they're just about done blooming right now.
That's a great time. Absolutely.
Once they get done blooming, I was going to do it again, but I didn't want to do any damage because they're not mine.
Oh.
Well, for a customer, so I just went around on somebody's stuff.
I thought it was the neighbors.
So she just,
I thought you were the mad pruner in the neighborhood.
She was just going next door trimming the
people's shrubs. They called me that before, too.
No, I think that's fine. And I think you have perfect timing, as soon as they kind of do that big flush of flowers, then I'd certainly go ahead and chop them back. I wouldn't do a heavy prune like we typically would do in the spring, but certainly you could take back several inches. Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
Go for it.
One other question before I let you go. I had some Asiatic lilies that were planted in a fairly dry spot, but they seemed to be doing really good until they got ready to open. And on the buds, they had like brown spots on them.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of contorted the petals when they finally opened up.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that, because of water, or was that a disease?
Yeah, they could have gotten, flowers can get the botrytis, that gray mold kind of stuff, and we certainly had perfect conditions for it in June. So they may have been, had a little botrytis, the little fungal disease, you know, because of that wetter weather we had, and then they went ahead and, you know, tried to produce as best they could. So I have a feeling it's probably had more to do with the weather, and it was just perfect conditions for fungal diseases, so... Hopefully,
so
it's
I
not
need to worry about that next year.
I it wouldn't be one that I would typically think of would be a perpetual problem, to be honest with you. I think I do, you know, the typical sort of cleanup, you know, as soon as the, you know, deadheading the flowers and getting that stuff out of there is a good idea. But beyond that, it wouldn't be one that I would typically think of would be a perpetual problem. Like we get sometimes on peonies where it seems to be this perpetual problem where you have where the peonies just don't open. They form buds but don't open. And then that seems to be this regular problem with those. But I wouldn't think about that with lilies.
Okay.
Thanks,
Sandy.
Sure. All right. Thank you.
Care now.
We'll go on here and talk with someone in Champaign next. Line one. Hello.
This may be another mad pruner question. the Rose of Sharon are blossoming very nicely this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they've grown so much that they're growing into the screen and into the gutter on our back porch. And I'd like to prune them back. So when should I do that?
Yeah, it's one of those things. They will, once they start flowering, as you know, they pretty well bloom on a regular basis once they start to bloom. So you're going to, at this point, if you're really wanting to prune, you're going to have to prune off some of the flower buds. You're just going to end up losing some of the flower buds. But as you know, they have a long bloom period. They'll take a couple of weeks to sort of recover from that and form new buds. And so you'll still get some later season ones. Ideally, obviously, it'd been something to do earlier in the season or wait until after they're sort of finished bloom. But unfortunately, that's going to be... easily a month or so from now.
So I could wait, though, for a month and then prune them once
sure.
the flowers are...
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, Rose of Sharon, I actually played around with... I had two shrubs this year that had gotten way too big. And this is those big, kind of almost a hibiscus-looking flower that people might be think of. And so I pruned one way back to the ground. I mean, just really, it was just a stub. And then the other one I just sort of lightly pruned just to see how well it would come back from the stub. And it did so well. It just totally bloomed, branched out from that stub. So they can take a very heavy prune and come out of it. The only thing I've noticed is the one that I didn't do the heavy prune on is flowering sooner.
Yeah.
So that is the only thing that I've noticed.
Well,
so.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
What about transplanting coneflowers and rudbeckia? When can that be done?
Yeah, I would either say for both of those, I would wait probably at least until September or wait until April of next year. It'd be your best bet.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right, thank you. Other calls are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free 800-222-9455. And you can email us at well-talk@illinois.edu. Sandy Mason is here. She's here once a month. Always on a Tuesday, we talk about lawn and garden care and things that grow in the home landscape. That's what we're doing. We'll also talk about houseplants, too. Mm-hmm. You give us a call, and she will do her best to help you out. I'm just thinking, I think we talked about, at some time in the past, talked about hydrangea, and somebody mm-hmm. said, well, do you deadhead those? And I think mm-hmm. that you said, well, you are inclined on yours just to kind of leave them there. You know, it does, the plant changes in its appearance, and, you know, that's just kind of part of the deal. And I have this hydrangea that this year, probably because it rained so much, just flowered just spectacularly, mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And now the blooms they're starting to fade.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of wondering, well, what I'm going to do. If you do deadhead them, will you get some more flowers, or is that a kind of thing that once it's had its main flowering, that's pretty much what it's going to do for the year?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the variety. Some of them are much better at reflowering than others. So if you think of Endless Summer is one that's been around for a few years now, and it seems to be this perpetual flower mm-hmm. once it gets going. And so you certainly could deadhead it. I'm not sure that I've seen that on even some of the other ones, like the blue ones and some of those that we get, that they necessarily bloom. They seem to have that certain amount. The ones that bloom on old wood especially, they seem to have those flower buds developed, they're ready to go, and that's it. So unless you have one of those that you know is either one that's going to flower on a regular basis, like any of the, like Annabelle and maybe some of those that, that bloom on Newwood, you might want to go ahead and deadhead them. But it, to me, it's kind of, I think it's kind of interesting. But they do get to that brown point. Once they get to the brown point, they're not all that attractive. Yeah. So I think that's
I was just stunned. It was just stunned by the plant. And it can, not only did it make these huge, beautiful, they started out of these huge, beautiful, big snowball-y like white flowers. And I thought, oh, well, that was very nice. And then one day they started to turn pink.
So they finally,
they finally did change color and were beautiful pink. And I was just totally amazed. It may not, I don't know if I'd ever do that again, but it was so nice. Best show in all the time I've had that plant.
Amazing. And I've talked to several people that have said the same thing. So those June conditions, lots of moisture, warmer weather, those kind of things, I think it just was, the hydrangeas loved it. And then that's what coaxes us back into growing hydrangeas. We forget those times when they don't do as well as we like. So
I guess maybe in the future I just need to just pour the water on the plant, maybe at the very least, just make sure it gets plenty of moisture.
Yeah, and I think that is a lot of it. I think that's absolutely a lot of it on those. They have big leaves. They tend to, you know, even if you notice they have some fairly good moisture, if it's really hot, they still kind of wilt.
They wilt. Oh, yeah.
So they need a lot of water.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, let's talk with someone else here. Someone in Mahomet, line one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. So actually, I have two related questions to what you've just talked about. The first concerns hydrangeas. I have several plantings of dwarf oak leaf hydrangea, it's Sykes dwarf, and it's no longer dwarf. And so what I'd like to know is how to do major prunings on these, and what do you look for? Do you look for buds, or how do you prune these guys back so that they're within a reasonable size of what you want them to be? The second question I have concerns peonies, and I think you might have talked about this just before I tuned in, and that is I have a problem with a couple of my peonies in the sense that the buds, they just kind of blast. Polyphae is one of them. That's been a particularly bad one, even though it's planted right next to another one, Crinkled White. Crinkled White does great. Polyphae looks like the buds never open, and when they do, they're misformed. So, comments on both of those questions?
Yeah.
I'll hang up and turn on my radio. Thanks
sure.
A lot.
All right.
Sure.
Thank you.
I think the big thing, sometimes dwarf is in relation to the parent plant, the typical. So if the parent plant gets 10, 15 feet tall, then a 6-foot hydrangea or whatever would be considered
would be
a dwarf because
getting
10 to 15, they typically would get very tall. And so sometimes it's in relation. So we think of dwarf maybe being 3 or 4 feet, when sometimes that's truly not what it is. Plus, I'm convinced with our Illinois soils and stuff that whatever they say it's going to get to, add another couple feet. Because that's my feeling with a lot of these plants, that our growing conditions are so good. And as we talked about, this was a perfect year for a lot of plants to grow. So I think that's probably part of it. So just sort of let you know that sometimes you really have to read the label, even if it says dwarf. Oak leaf hydrangeas do bloom on old wood. So we need the wood from the year before. So we have to pay attention when we prune them. So you typically would want to prune them right after they're finished flowering. So I would think they're probably at that point now where they're getting ready to flower, or I'm not sure on the dwarf, it might be a little bit sooner than that. So as soon as they're finished flowering, that's when I do my major pruning. So you don't want to do it really late in the fall or the winter or really early spring, because then you're going to be cutting off the flower buds. You're not going to kill the plant, but you're going to be cutting off flower buds. So you can do some major pruning. I just wait till right after they flower, then you're fine. Go for it. The other thing, as far as the peonies go, and as I mentioned before, that they do get this problem, it seems to be on a fairly regular basis, and it has a whole lot to do with our wet, cool springs, is they get this fungal disease and this botrytis, and just what you mentioned was where they form a bud, but the bud never opens. It kind of turns brown, sits there. So unfortunately, it's one of those things. Good sanitation, you know, getting the stuff out of there. You know, when the foliage does finally die, make sure you get all of that out of there. Some seem to be more prone to it than others. Seems to be a regular problem. You may want to think about a fungicide spray early in the spring as the leaves are first starting to come up, when they're about 4 inches or so, start a spray. You generally have to do it a couple of different times, you know, like every week to 10 days. You're trying to protect the foliage as well as the new flower buds that are coming on. So, you know, typically we wouldn't think about using fungicides on a lot of our flowering plants, but that may be one that if it just seems to be a regular problem, that we might want to at least do it for a couple of years to see if you can sort of break the cycle.
Yeah. I have some growing around my house, and they're old. old plants. They've been there for a long time, and they were there when we got the house. And I am assuming that, I don't know what variety they are, but I kind of think that they're all the same variety. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting to me was that this year, some of them did really well, but then others, they did this. And I couldn't really figure out what exactly that was about other than, well, the location of the plants was different. In fact, there were some that they were on one side of the house and they were only about 10 feet apart. Mm-hmm. But some of them did really well, and others just did. The buds looked really sick and they didn't look like they would open. Some of them eventually did, and the flowers were sort of okay, but there were others that didn't even open. And I thought, well, that's kind of strange, particularly because they all seem to be the same kind of plant.
Well, and actually location can make a difference, because for the fungal diseases to infect, they need a certain period of time where there's actually free moisture. There's moisture on the leaves, the buds, whatever it is. And if it's in an area where it gets good wind, air circulation, gets a little wind, a little breeze, and it dries up fast enough, then the fungus can infect. So absolutely, location can make a difference. And I don't know if you noticed that maybe as you think about yours, if maybe one was in just a little bit more, maybe right next to the house, near other shrubs, where there just wasn't good air circulation, might be absolutely enough that one would have a harder time than the other ones.
Yeah, that sounds like maybe that's what the issue was.
So maybe even moving them. You know, we wouldn't move peonies now, but certainly in September they could be moved. And that might be actually another really good suggestion. If it seems to be a perpetual problem on that particular one, it may be a good indication it's time to move it somewhere else where it gets better air circulation.
Okay. Next caller is in Champaign. Line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have roses that have, I guess it's a fungus. It's the leaves turn yellow and then fall off.
Mm-hmm. Do they get spots on them first and then fall off?
Yes, they do.
Yeah. It's probably, I love plant pathologists. It's called black spot of roses. So they get black spots on them.
Very imaginative.
I know. Well, it's nice. It's very clear cut.
It's mostly yellow.
Well, they get black spots first.
Yes.
And then once they get the black spot, then absolutely the leaf will go ahead and turn yellow and then fall off to the point where they're almost completely defoliated by now, or certainly by August they're completely defoliated. Yeah. It's one of those things. It's not good for the plant. They can actually go through this, you know, pretty much every year and still manage to survive. But it's not very attractive for us. So it would be one of those things that, unfortunately, it would have to be a fungicide spray, and you'd have to start it early in the season, trying to protect those leaves against infection. It's a fungal disease. Good sanitation, you know, getting those leaves out of there, which I know sometimes is hard, but the fungus will hang out even through next year on those yellow leaves that are laying around. So really trying to clean things up can help too. Good air circulation, we mentioned that, but with the peony problems, but certainly with roses as well, good air circulation. But often it's a matter of using a fungicide, or you may want to look for, there are some newer varieties that they're supposed to be resistant to black spot, or at least don't get it as bad. Or you just say it's going to be defoliated and I'm just going to deal with it. Let it go.
Is there any way to prevent it from starting?
It'd have to be a fungicide spray. You'd have to use a spray on it.
For next year?
Yes, you'd have to start it early in the year, as the leaves are first starting to come out, and you're really just trying to protect the leaves against infection.
I see.
Yeah, so that's the unfortunate part of it.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, very good. And let's go to another caller. So someone in McLean County on our toll-free line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a couple questions. One of them is, we have forsythia, and my husband likes to cut it back because it's kind of in the drive, it gets in the way when you're pulling out of the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he prunes it at the wrong time, because last couple of years we didn't get any flowers at all, and my neighbors and everybody else did. So I was trying to figure out when should you stop pruning so we will get flowers next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, forsythia and lilacs are really in that same category. They bloom early in the season, so you really need to prune them right after they flower.
Okay.
If he's pruning them late into fall or even early spring, he's cutting off the flower buds.
Okay, so how about in the middle of summer, like right now?
You're getting kind of late. You're probably okay now. I probably would not be pruning after August.
Okay.
For sure.
Is there no pruning after August?
Yeah, I think that'd probably be your best bet. They still should have time to go ahead and produce flower buds.
Okay. How about mums? Because I know my mums get so huge mm-hmm. that by the time the flowers come, they all flop over.
Right.
And I know someone has said that you should prune them, and I've never thought of doing that. So I would like to do it this year. When can I do that before?
Yeah, we're getting kind of late for this year to do that. Yeah. Typically, it's another one of those that as they get to be about when mums, and you could do this with asters and would probably be another good candidate for this, for the tend to flop over when they get too tall. But when they get to be about 4 inches, 4 to 6 inches, then you just take your thumb and forefinger, or you can just take a pair of pruning shears, whatever, and just kind of off with their heads. You just want to take off just the top, you know, inch or so. And then they'll come up, they'll branch out a little more. And you can actually keep doing that until usually we say don't do it after July 1st. Because at that point, our days are getting such that most of them are starting to set their flower buds.
Okay.
And you don't want to wait too late into the season, or they won't have a chance to go ahead and set flower buds before it gets too cold.
So not after July 1st. Because some reason I thought that it was August, and I totally forgot. Someone at the nursery told me, and I thought it was later in the summer, but
no.
Missed it already.
I mean, you can try it. The only thing, I mean, you could do, I wouldn't wait any longer than now, for sure.
Could I prune them down to, like, maybe a foot high, or that I'm really chopping it off then? Because they've gotten quite big again.
Right. Because of the day length. We just need to make sure that they have enough time, because you're going to set them back a couple weeks by pruning them back now. You're going to set them back a couple weeks before they have a chance to set flower buds again. So you figure you add another 2 weeks there. We're getting closer, you know, toward August. They should have enough time. Depends on the variety. But they need a chance to go ahead and set those flower buds flower before it gets too cold.
Okay.
They should be all right at this point. I'm just letting you know that
that's the
disclaimer. I have to have a disclaimer in there somewhere that in case they don't. But I certainly, you should be okay to do it now, but I would not wait much later than now.
Yeah, I was planning on doing that today or tomorrow. But yeah, I think I'm going to start a little calendar that says prune. No pruning after.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that we just don't know when we're going to get that first frost and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So,
well, thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you. Well, I think that suggests that for people who are really into the gardening thing, or maybe if there's something that you're trying to remember to do, the thing to do is, yes, make a note, make a calendar. There are some that are ready-made for that mm-hmm. sort of say, okay, here it is in mid-June, think about doing this. Or here it is in August, think about doing this. Or you could always just make your own, because there will be certain things where you really need to do it at a certain time. Mm-hmm. And if you forget and you think, oh, yeah, I was supposed to, but at that point it may be too late for that year.
Right.
So you got to get yourself some kind of system of reminder so that you know there are certain things at certain times that you want to do.
Yeah. And we actually have a book that we sell that we produce locally, My Garden Journey, that people can get from the Champaign County Extension Office. And we just kind of go through the whole thing of, you know, this is what you need to think about the landscape. I think bagworms are a good example of that. You mm-hmm. know, bagworms, people don't think about them until they start actually seeing the bags. When that gets in, which is now, and that gets to the point where we're really getting late in the season. They're harder to control. Once they stop feeding, they're almost impossible to control without picking them off is your only thing. So, but we don't notice them when they're young, mid-June, end of June. We don't notice them then, but that's when they need to be sprayed. So that's truly one of those things. You got to write it down or something to remind you so you don't miss that.
Yeah, that or also too, because we've got so many questions about pruning. People want to know what, and pruning and moving stuff. They want to know when can I cut it back and when can I move it? And it's all, well, it really depends on the plant.
Right.
So you got to know what it is. And then you got to make sure that you're doing it at the right time. And that's something that you maybe almost have to plan ahead, start thinking now, all right, now next year, this is what I want to do.
We're getting to that point. Yeah. But I think a pretty good rule of thumb is that, especially on shrubs or trees or anything, if it blooms before mid-June, if it's that May bloomer like forsythias and lilacs or anything that blooms early in the season like that, those are actually blooming on old wood from the year before. So you really have to pay attention, and those would be ones that we would prune right after they flower. So if it blooms before June 15th, then that's a spring bloomer, old wood, prune them right after they flower. If it blooms later on, like pink spirea and potentilla and a bunch of those, they're blooming on new wood, new stuff that's coming up. And those you have a lot more flexibility on when you prune them, because they just need a chance to produce some, you know, decent branches, and they'll go ahead and flower for you. So you really have to kind of pay attention to. But that might be a good rule of thumb for people to sort of think about. When does it bloom? Okay, if it's an early bloomer, I have to wait until right after it blooms.
Okay. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She is on the program once a month on Tuesday and answers lawn and garden care questions. Can be anything that grows in the home landscape, trees, shrubs, ornamentals, food crops. We can talk about houseplants. You have a problem, you're looking for a plant suggestion, any and all of that, just give us a call, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that is good anywhere that you can hear us. So that's 800-222-9455. And if you'd like to send your question along by email, you can do that too. That's will-talk@illinois.edu. Is there anything now in particular that you would say at this time where we are now, we're almost midsummer, getting close to midsummer, and we're at the time when, on the averages, you would expect we're going to get the hottest temperatures. July is, on average, the hottest month. Anything in particular that you'd say right at this time, this is what you want to be thinking about?
Well, I think a couple of things. We're kind of in that maintenance mode, I guess, for a lot of respects. You know, think about watering and deadheading, whatever it is. But certainly we're at that point, too, where, you know, we're going to start seeing maybe grubs in the lawn. It kind of depends on, they haven't been, certain areas I've seen had really bad problems with lawn grubs, and other areas not so much. So it'd be one of those things that if you have a patch of grass that just seems like it's dying fairly quickly, and it's not just sort of this overall browning of your grass, which was probably more of a drought issue, but if you're having these definite patches, it might be a good time to investigate to see what's going on. And that would be, grubs would be one of those things that they sort of make the grass kind of lay back like a bad toupee. So, you know, it just sort of, there's no roots, or it sort of just lays back. So you can usually tell if grubs are an issue. So I'd be thinking about grubs, certainly. It'd also be something I would, on the lawns, I'd also be raising my mower height. We don't want to mow it as, you know, you might raise it to 2.5 inches at least, or maybe even 3, depending on what kind of, how fast your grass is growing. And just to sort of make sure that it has a good root system when we go into these drought periods. So thinking about that is a good thing. Also in the vegetable garden, you know, lots of things are happening now. I'd be looking at my tomatoes. I've had a couple of tomatoes, some early varieties, but not much at this point. But I'd really be looking at those. This would be a time where we might get tomato hornworm. There's a caterpillar that seems to just defoliate everything quickly. Maybe some disease issues as well. We're seeing on those lower leaves, sometimes we'll get some disease issues on the tomatoes. So either taking those off as you see it, or you may need to do a fungicide spray. But really looking at things is probably the big thing. It's just sort of walking around your yard, and so you catch things early, I guess, is the big part.
Phil's been in recently, Phil Nixon, and he said that he thought maybe as far as the grubs that most people are concerned with, that's Japanese beetles. Yeah. That's what that is. And he said that it's funny, he's always said in the past that the beetles are really attracted to grass that's been well watered.
Yeah.
So he says,
right,
what you want is to live next door to somebody who's really into watering their lawn, because the beetles will go over there and leave your grass alone. And then he said this year, particularly early on in spring, because we got so much rain and it was so sort of, it was everywhere over big areas.
Right.
Then he said, well, that what that means then is the beetles, they're just kind of spread out. They're not going to concentrate in the places where it got the water, because everybody got the water. So that, in fact, that's probably a good thing. The more sort of spread out they are, the less damage that they're going to do, if that's what you're concerned with, is the damage in the grass.
And just to see a few grubs, I mean, the grass will tolerate, certainly at 5-6 per square foot is not a big issue. When we start getting to 8-10 per square foot, then there's an issue. So that's, absolutely, if you could spread it all out. I haven't noticed nearly the Japanese beetle problems that I've had in the past. So I'm kind of happy about that.
Yeah.
I've talked to a couple people that feel like they've had a really big problem with them this year, but most people, from what I have heard, have said that they are not getting nearly the problems with Japanese beetles, which is a good thing. I'm hoping they all drown out from the last couple of years of rain.
We'll talk next with somebody in McLean County, in Mononk, on our line number 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
I have an apricot tree. It's a good-sized tree now. It's probably 10 years old or so, but it never gets any apricots on. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what the problem?
Does it ever flower for you? You see flowers?
It's just a few flowers, just a very few, if I remember right. But it doesn't seem to bear at all.
Yeah, the problem with apricots or apricots is we're kind of at that point where we're almost too cold for them, and you're just even a little bit farther north of us. And they're really susceptible to winter injury. They're susceptible to those late frosts that we get. They're even more susceptible than peaches. They're certainly a lot more susceptible to cold injury than apples. So we've had actually a couple of years where it got just so cold in the winter. Certainly last year was a big issue. 2 years ago was a big issue where it just got too cold in the wintertime and it just killed off the flower buds. So
well, I've had neighbors around here have had really good apricots.
Oh, have they really?
Mine just never bears. And this is from a tree. Actually, it's a seed that grew up under a real good tree.
Oh.
I said, I'll plant one of those. It's grown up to a nice tree that never bears.
Oh, but it was a seedling grown?
Yes. I dug that myself from under another tree that was a real good bearing tree.
Right, but the problem with seedling grown plants is that there's a lot of variability in the genetics if you're planting a seed. So they can be quite precocious, and, you know, they've been selected. The ones that you buy a named brand, they've been selected for good production, early production, all those kinds of things. So I think you're probably just seeing a problem in the fact that it is a seedling-grown one.
Yeah. So, one person told me one time you might try shocking it by cutting off some of the roots. I don't know if that would help or not, but somebody mentioned that to me.
Yeah, you can certainly try that. Sometimes that has been suggested on to try to get things to bear, but I think you might be better off if you're truly wanting apricots, is to go ahead and buy a named variety.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a nice looking tree anyway, but just doesn't
sure. Yeah, they are pretty trees. You're right.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Over to another call. This is someone in Piatt County, line one. Hello.
Oh, hello. Talking of Japanese beetles, I this year managed to plant some rhubarb in my new bed, and it was the Victoria variety, and it just grew with all the weather we had. It just grew and was beautiful, and now I've noticed that almost 99% of the leaves are gone to Japanese beetles. Does that mean that the plant will not develop for next year?
I'm a little surprised by that I didn't realize they'd eat Japanese. I didn't realize Japanese beetles would eat rhubarb, to be honest with you.
But my friend is beautiful.
Go figure.
Her rhubarb has never had Japanese beetles, and I was
never
so surprised.
Aren't you lucky?
Yes.
But it sounds like it got a good start, got good root system going, and it's late enough to the season that I'd say it's probably going to do. It's not great, but it's probably going to be fine. And I would imagine once the Japanese beetles, because they aren't here, you know, for the full season, we'll start seeing a reduction. Certainly after August, and certainly into September, we'll see a reduction. That it might even go ahead and send up some new shoots at that time.
So, should I cut them off or just let them remain on there?
I would just let them remain. If there's any green left to the leaf whatsoever, I would leave them on there. But boy, that's interesting. Go figure.
Yeah, and my second question is that I think everybody could grow morning glories. So I planted them, and it said they like poor soil, and I certainly have that. And they're growing. They're green, and they all came up. And so I put a cute fence behind them, and so they just keep growing. And they never bloom. Did I leave them too close together, or am I the only one who can't get a morning glory to bloom?
Well, it could be just a timing thing. I don't know when you planted these.
It was May.
Oh, wow. I'm surprised they're not blooming at this point.
Well, yeah.
I suppose maybe if they're really crowded, that might keep them. It could be even sometimes if the soil is too good, to be honest with you, if they get too much nitrogen or whatever. I don't know. You haven't fertilized them or anything like that, have you?
No.
Okay, yeah. I certainly wouldn't fertilize them. And it could be just because of all that lush weather we had in June that they've just put on lots and lots and lots of green growth. But I have a feeling you're gonna find here real soon that they're going to start flowering for you.
Okay. Okay. Well, thanks so much.
Uh-huh. Good
Very
luck.
Good. Bye. Thank you. I think we have a return follow-up from an earlier caller here in McLean County, line number two. Hello.
Hi. Yeah. Thank you for taking the call again.
Sure.
I forgot to ask you, and it's funny because I'm going to repeat just what the lady just talked about, but just a little bit more about morning glory, by the way. I have tons of them growing, and they haven't flowered yet. And they've been in ground for 2 or 3 years or more. That's just a comment. What I call back is Japanese beetles. Yes, they eat rhubarb like crazy. And then I was just wondering, do you think they're getting fewer in general? And how? Because I've been spraying seven. Well, I've sprayed only once, and I'm wondering if I should how many more rounds I should do. On my trees, especially.
You mean fewer in this particular season, or in general every year, as far as fewer?
I'm thinking, you know, somebody said to me, a friend of mine said, oh, well, when they first came, they came like crazy, and over time, you know, like over years, that they may not be so aggressive and there'll be fewer Japanese beetles, you know. Like when the Asian beetles came, the first few years, I remember they were they were everywhere. I mean, we still have them, but they're not as prolific as they were before.
Yeah, well, insects are one of those, you know, they certainly, their populations are rise and fall. I mean, that's very typical. And probably, you know, pretty much what I've seen and certainly what Phil Nixon has mentioned, the entomologists with the extension, is that the first few years, like first 3 years or so, they're really heavy. You know, we see high populations. And then the population kind of does this little downfall and you don't see as many. But it doesn't mean that you're, you know, you're never going to have a higher population somewhere along the line. I have a feeling, you know, it may be one of those things. Certainly, I'm thinking that certainly we have all these flooded areas and the grubs live in the soil. There's certainly a possibility they could have drowned. Cold, to some extent, might have been an issue. So to answer your question, they're here. It's great when we have these lower populations, but don't assume that that means you're never going to have a high population again. It's just because of weather conditions and stuff, they rise and fall.
And then I did spray about a couple weeks ago with Liquid 7, and I'm wondering how often should I do that? Because I was thinking maybe at least three every couple weeks, and then I think that will take me through. Because I don't see as many as I have seen in the past. And I'm trying to figure out whether I should just kind of skip the next two for the year or if I should go ahead and spray them anyway.
Well, I would say I would just sort of wait and see. I've noticed that in my yard, I'm not getting the big influx that I did the first part of the season. We certainly can see them through the month of August. They typically would go ahead and we'd see lower populations in September or so. But certainly we have a whole other month here where you could certainly see them. So I would just wait and see. You know, you may find that you just want to wait and either pick them off or, you know, put them in a bucket, you know, drop them into a soapy water bucket or something like that and sort of skip the seven for a while.
Well, they're on a tree. Well, they get our couple of our maple trees, and we have a little leaf linden, which is one of their favorites. So that's the, you know, just picking them is an option.
Yeah, that's not going to work quite so much.
But I was just thinking that if it was a badly infested year, how often would you recommend spraying? Because I'm going to write that down too, because I seem to not remember that. And the material in the seven on the seven doesn't really make it clear. As a matter of fact, they don't make it clear as to how often you should do it.
Well, typically with something, it depends on what you're spraying, but typically with seven, we probably say every week to 10 days.
Okay.
That's probably how it is. But then, again, it sort of depends on the populations. If you're using something that's more like some of the pyrethrum-type insecticides, it's pretty much a quick knockdown. You hit them, and you're going to have to do that one more often. So it just kind of depends.
Do you have any, I'm going to ask you last question. I will hang up. But do you have any comments on the Bayer product that the people use in terms of affecting bees and other insects as well? Because we tried that 1 year, and then I decided not to use it again because I hear it's very toxic.
Well, you know, any pesticide used improperly is going to be toxic to some extent, but there is some debate about the systemic product. I think that you're talking about that Bayer certainly sells the imidacloprid, and it's taken up into the plant, and the concern is for any insects, especially on something like little leaf linden that has very attractive flowers, and a lot of insects go to those flowers. You know, what's that doing to the population of other insects besides just Japanese beetles? So there's certainly some debate there. It'd be one of those things that I would really think long and hard. Is this a plant that is in a high-profile area? You know, there's some big issues. If it does get Japanese beetles, it should be applied early in the season. So to do it late in the season isn't as effective because the plant really needs to take it up. So you need to be doing it in March, April at the latest. So there's some caveats to using that kind of a product. And so you really have to think through that on how important it is for this. Because usually Japanese beetles, I know it's a pain, it's a nuisance, all that kind of stuff, but generally it's not life-threatening for the plant. So,
okay. Well, a couple years ago, they literally took down 95% of the leaves.
I know.
Linden, yeah, but there's nothing like it this year. No, I appreciate that because I decided not to use them. I did buy some for roses, but even that, I'm thinking I've just wasted money because we get beautiful butterflies and bees and things like that, and I hate killing them. So, but anyway, well, thank you very much.
Okay,
very good. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus. Sandy Mason is the guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County on once a month on a Tuesday. She's here on the program. We talk about lawn and garden care, and whatever questions you have, she'll do her best to help you out. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. The thing that's really too bad about Japanese beetles is apparently there was nothing that will eat them.
Supposedly.
They don't have any birds. Natural predator. I thought even birds wouldn't
eat
them.
Well, supposedly, I have read that cardinals and grackles and some of the bigger birds will actually eat them, but they're not eating enough, obviously, because I'm not seeing it happen. So supposedly there are some that eat them, but I don't know. I don't get that either.
All right. Urbana next for a caller. Line one. Hello.
About the Bayer, it seems to me it's probably neither Seven nor Bayer are very toxic, but it's probably less dangerous to bees because there's very little transfer into the flower. And as for the foliage, the insect would have to eat the foliage for it to be affected, and bees aren't going to eat foliage.
Right, but I'm just letting you know that there is some debate, and what I had heard on lindens, especially little leaf linden, that there was some real concern that the imidacloprid product was actually being transferred into those small flowers, and there's certainly a lot of insects. I'm just saying there's a debate on it. I'm just letting you know there's a debate on that. So there is some concern about that. Certainly, Seven is very toxic to bees if it's sprayed on it. And the problem is, especially if people would use a dust or even the particles of Seven, evidently bees sometimes think that's part of this pollen, and they'll actually pick up those particles and take it back to their hive or their nest. So there's some real concerns about Seven. It's certainly, we know it's toxic to bees. So there's some issues out there beyond just the bee actually being sprayed or eating the foliage or anything like that. So there are some other concerns about that. So I think the bottom line is people should always go for the least toxic. Whatever's going to work for you, least toxic, whether it's, you know, picking them off or whether it's using some of the pyrethrin sprays that tend to be the quick knockdown, whatever gets sprayed is killed, but not a long-term effect where actually other insects might be. So it would be one of those things that we always want to look for the least toxic, and there certainly are some other things out there besides Seven and imidacloprid.
Well, one of the real downsides to Bayer is it's very expensive.
It is expensive, especially on big trees and stuff. It's very expensive, which is another good reason to think long and hard whether it's worth using.
The Japanese beetles seem to like the flowers best, and if you disbud some things, that will more or less take care of the Japanese beetles, particularly roses.
Yeah, but they sure hit the foliage, too, I've noticed. But, yeah, they like the flowers best, but it's, you know, whatever the preference is, I guess, at the time, and whatever's available. So,
okay,
but
well,
good point.
Yeah, thanks for the call. And I guess, it too, you know, if you're thinking about, if you are thinking about using something that's systemic, by the time you see the Japanese beetles, it's too late to use that.
Sure.
So even if you were thinking about doing that, you've got to do that several months before the insects actually appear.
Right.
You can't say, "Oh, there's Japanese beetles," and use that. You can use the Seven because it hits you. You hit them and that's that. But the other stuff that has to be taken up by the plant, you got to give the plant the time to do that.
Right. And the imidacloprid, the Bayer type products, and the caller was absolutely right. It isn't transferred well into the flowers, and you'll notice that on roses. That even if you use it on roses, you'll find that they leave the foliage alone, but they still hit the flowers. They'll still go ahead and eat the flowers.
Yeah.
So deadheading those and just not letting them bloom at that point may help to just even keep them away from the plant. So.
And the other thing that Phil has always said, I'm sure we've talked about it too, is that Japanese beetles are attracted to plants that have already been fed on by other Japanese beetles.
Right.
So the more that you can do right at the beginning when they first appear to limit the damage, the better you are off. And then also if at the beginning, maybe if the numbers are reasonably small, now if you got a huge tree, you can't do it. But if it's a plant that you can get to, you can do this thing that you described. You just need to get yourself a big bucket and put some soapy water in there and hold it over by the plant. And if you just brush the plant and disturb the beetles, they're just going to drop right into the water, and then you don't have to worry about the insecticide, and well, it's more labor intensive, but it's a way to do it without using any pesticide at all.
Right, and it is one of those things. They generally always arrive mid June. We can pretty well guarantee they're going to show up mid June. So it's another one of the things you're talking about your calendar. Well, mid June, it's time to start looking for Japanese beetles. They always in my yard, and I suspect it's like the same way in everybody's yard. They hit this one rose first. That's always my indicator plant. That's what they go to first. So I know that's mid June. I need to look at that rose because I guarantee you that's probably where they're going to show up first.
Okay, so. Very good. Let's talk with some other folks. Rantoul is next, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
excuse me just a minute. several frogs have taken up residence. I'm going to try to change the focus here for a minute. I'm a senior citizen. I live in an assisted living complex with a limited amount of space, but I still love to garden. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe your office should pay a little more attention or put a little more focus because there are going to be more of us all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of gardening in small spaces, what we could, the things that we are limited from doing, the things that we can do, and do that. Now, as I said, I love to garden, but there are a lot of things I have to depend on my so-called kids, my children, to do for me. Yeah. So, okay, that is one thing. The other thing is that purchasing things that are out of season, the price was right. The price was right. I went to a local rural store, and I got a tree. I got three shrubs, and I got two perennials, big plants, big pots for $13.
Wow.
Now, you can't beat that. Now, here we go again. I can't plant those. I have to wait for my children to come. I call them up and say, bring the shovel.
They should just know
it
is to bring it.
They didn't look very good, really. They dried up. But I brought them home, watered them good, cleaned all the dead stuff out, and golly, I think they could probably sell them again if I took them back. but to go back to the first subject, I would like to see some information on my first topic.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly have a lot of information about container gardening. We actually did here in Champaign County. We actually did a program with low-income seniors called My Mini Victory Garden, where we actually worked with them. Master gardeners worked with them using these earth boxes, which kind of the big containers is really what they are. Look like a big window box kind of thing. Like that. Okay. And it's amazing how much you can grow
even in
those earth boxes. They're big enough. You can easily do two tomato plants. You can do a tomato plant, a few herbs. I mean, it's really surprising how much you can do in those small boxes like that. So
well,
you're absolutely right.
Where I am, because I'm on the east side, of course, I get the sun right away.
Yeah.
Everything, the building is brick. My patio is cement. And, of course, it soaks up that sun and then, soaks it up and then it gives it off. And I want to go along with one of the previous callers who said that she was waiting for her vines to bloom, and I have the same trouble every year. It doesn't matter what month I get, I get the seeds in. I wait and wait and wait for them to flower. They eventually do, maybe not a whole lot, but enough to make it worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I don't know what my problem is either, but I seem to have the same problem.
Well, it could be something else going on with the plant, so it may not be.
Well, that's possible.
You may not be doing anything wrong whatsoever. So, but thanks for your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, you can do an awful lot with various kinds
of
containers.
It's surprising.
And so, if you have limited space, and if you live in an apartment, you have a little balcony. You have some place you can put the pot. And I guess the big issue is it going to get sun?
Yeah, and that's if you're growing vegetables, that is going to be a big issue. But even some of the vegetables can take some shade, like any of the leafy crops, spinach and lettuce and all those things will take some shade, even if you had an easterly area where at least going to get some sun in the morning, and then they would certainly do well. So you may have to do a little bit of kind of changing what you grow, but you're right. So
all right, let's see if we can get one more caller here, Champaign, line one. Hello. Caller there in Champaign. I guess they changed their mind. Well, we have maybe about a minute or so left. I don't know if there's any last kind of thing that you would want to mention. We sort of are in the mid-time here where, as you say, it's kind of maintenance. You know, trying to take care of stuff, make sure that it gets plenty of water, and you kind of continue to weed and do a little trimming and kneading up. But there's probably not a whole lot. It's probably too early to think about planting anything very ambitious, like trees, shrubs, perennials. That's probably, you don't want to plant those in the hottest time of the year.
It just gets harder because then you're really going to have to make sure that you water them. So we'd like it to know, but certainly you could later on in the season, and once we get into September or so, it's really a good time to be thinking about if you want to go ahead and plant, get these deals that the caller was talking about and go ahead and planting things. I think that's great. That one thing I will say when it comes to weeds, when it's really dry, it's really hard to pull weeds. But if you can at least cut them off so they don't set seed, most of our weeds that we have are ones that are annuals that are going to come back every year from seed. So if you can keep them from setting seed, that makes all the difference in the world, whether it's purslane or lamb's quarters or whatever it is. Keep them, just cut them off, or at least mow them off, or weed whack them off, or something, even if they resprout, just to make sure they don't flower is a big thing.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much for being here. Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's here on the program once a month. It's always on a Tuesday. Is it the third Tuesday? Why can I never remember this? It's the second Tuesday. I'm glad that you remember.
How many years have we been doing this, David?
Oh, a million years.
That's all right.
She's here on the second Tuesday of the month in the 10 o'clock hour. We talk about lawn and garden care. In the meantime, you can reach her at her office, and you can also look for her and other folks like her on the program Illinois Gardener, Thursday nights, 7 o'clock, WILO TV. Hey, thanks very much.
Thank you.